Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Women's Football Show podcast. I'll be here every week bringing you the best bits and exclusive content from the show. Don't forget you can listen back to the full Women's Football Show via the TalkSport app. This week we're on Monday at 10 p.m. So swipe for TalkSport 2, find Monday, and you can listen full there. This week I was joined by my former teammate Gemma Davison as we unpacked a huge week in the world of women's football. But I started by catching up with Gemma to see what she's up to now as her illustrious football career continues. Happy New Week, everybody. Just at the top of our show, I just wanted to give a special mention to our former guest, Amber Keegan-Stobbs, who's been promoted to the Championship with Newcastle. Ashley Hinks has also been promoted with AFC Wimbledon. And of course, our guest last week, Laura Kaminski, in her first season at Crystal Palace, is now in the WSL. What an incredible achievement. So I think we need to keep the ball rolling with these incredible guests. And then I look to my right-hand side and I see my former Arsenal England teammate Gemma Davison. Gemma, thank you for joining me. How are you doing, mate?
All the better for seeing you. It's been a while.
I know, it's been a while. I want to take us back to when we first met, right? I don't know if you remember, because you know what I'm like, I remember everything, which is a good thing and a bad thing. But I remember we played against each other. You were at Watford, mm-hmm. and I was at Arsenal. I think I was in the under-12s at Arsenal. And you and Charlene were like the best players at Watford. And I remember thinking, oh, I wish that girl was on our team. And then we got you. About two seasons later, I know you're back at Watford now and you've been kind of back and forth Arsenal and Watford throughout your career. What was it that made you come to our team, apart from because we were the best?
Yeah, I just remember beating you in a tournament and you were crying. That's what I remember.
That don't sound like me.
No, it was just this rivalry. But as a Watford youngster, everyone just wanted to be Arsenal. And we knew we were a good team. And we used to thump teams at the weekend. We had a really good group of players, but Arsenal were like the calibre. You were a big face of it. It was quite a few players. I can't remember everyone. Emma Thomas was another.
Hayley Kemp.
Yeah, Hayley Kemp. What a player. But I'm an Arsenal fan. I always have been. And we just used to play you and you were like the team that we always wanted to beat. So when we did beat you this one time, I'll never forget it. It's one of my favourite moments of my career and I was about 11 years old. But you were a great player and I think big face and everyone was speaking about you all the time, not to blow smoke. Or
that's why I got you in, Gem. I wanted you to, like, you know.
I mean, you could have been my agent at the time. I didn't know you thought I was a good player. I didn't even know you knew me. So that was great. And then obviously had an opportunity.
So your career's seen you play many different places, different countries in America, played all over England. You know, what has been your favourite, apart from Arsenal, because we know that's our favourite experience, other than Arsenal, what was your favourite footballing experience and why?
Do you know what? I'll take it right back to grassroots. I loved tournaments. I loved, and I think that shaped me for my career. Playing with Watford, we were so good and I just enjoyed winning. And I knew I was a winner. Even playing for school, and I'll never forget, and I'm coaching now, like youth players, and I still love tournaments. And I'll take it right back to say tournament football as a youth player shaped my career. Obviously, we were brilliant at Arsenal, and then prime career, I was at Chelsea, we won everything. I played under my favourite manager, one of two, actually.
Go on, who are they?
Vic Akers. He gave me my career, gifted my career. But Emma Hayes came in and pushed for me. So it was inevitable I was going to go and play for at Chelsea at the age of 27. So it's a mix. Like, I feel like my childhood was unbelievable. I had great family, great parents, never put too much pressure on me. So I've got to go like childhood tournaments. And
yeah, they don't really have them anymore. I remember we used to play at the Regent's Park tournament, Warwick tournament. It was brilliant, wasn't it? I feel like they're not really around as much. Now, someone said to me the other week, I've got more clubs than Tiger Woods. And I started laughing. I think you and I are pretty similar. Now, I think sometimes people will look at the list of clubs you've been at and I've been at and think, oh, why do you move around so much? I think sometimes it's out of your control. You know, you go to different places, but what do you think it was, the reason why you kind of moved around so much? Was it because you never felt like you were settled? And what is it that's made you feel settled at certain clubs more than others?
Well, I think Arsenal was my dream. I established myself at Arsenal. It was tough to get there. And I'm forever grateful. And, you know, that'll always be there for me. I felt like I needed a change, so I went. But I always knew I'd play for Emma Hayes. And I could openly say there's regret for going. Leaving Chelsea, because I feel like I needed something new. I was seeking something else from the game, but I never ever found what I wanted. But I don't think I figured out. I felt like I wanted to play more, and it was getting to a time in my career where I wasn't going to play as much. But if I really look back, and I don't want to say I regret, but I've learned that I'm a winner, and I want to play for teams that are going to win trophies, and I can't settle for playing for a club that are mid-table.
Do you know what, Gem, right? It's
funny, and I don't mean it in an arrogant way.
No, I feel the exact same way as you, because I think we were both very unique growing up at Arsenal. I went into the first team when I was 14. You know, I won a quadruple when I was 18, similar to you. You were like, what, 18, 19 when we won the quadruple? Mm-hmm. And I think my whole career, I was always comparing to that amazing environment at Arsenal. And we were chasing that. So I don't think it's a coincidence, because everywhere I went, I was always comparing it to Arsenal. And at the time when I moved to Chelsea, and Chelsea were great to me, you know, they let me get out of my contract early to go to America because it was fully pro. But I did look back and I thought maybe I shouldn't have left Arsenal, because when I got into other dressing rooms, I just felt like, you know, it was like we'd lose a game and it was kind of like, where are we going out tonight and where are we going for dinner? And I'm thinking, when I was in the Arsenal dressing room, even if we conceded a goal, it was like the end of the world. So I completely, you know, empathise with you. But I want to take you back to, you might not even remember this, when we were at Arsenal together. And I remember thinking, you are one of the best players I've ever seen, right? In training, when you had the ball at your feet, no one could get near you. Was that something that you kind of worked on as a kid, or was it something you've always had? Because you were just unbelievable with the ball at your feet. Like, honestly, Jen, when you're on it, you're on it. I remember there was one time at the London Colney training ground in the 3G, and I was thinking, God, you're like Marta, literally. Like, and I'm sure all of us talk about this the same. Like, as a teammate and as a player, you were just unbelievable with the ball at your feet.
I don't know. Do you know what I put it down to is I just played for fun as a kid. I played at the park, on the streets, playing football with all the boys, and no one ever told me what to do. And I just feel like genuinely, what I feel is I had a natural technical ability that I never got coached. I had great coaches at Watford growing up that encouraged me to do what I was good at. But everyone my whole career has let me play free. And I never worked on it. I just think I was obsessed with football. I love the game. And I've always said it, and it's a big statement put out, but I feel like I love football more than most. And I just got obsessed with YouTube. I just used to watch Ronaldo. I know you're a Ronaldo fan. I know you love Ronaldo and Ronaldinho. And I just used to think, oh, I'm just going to try it. I was just like a kid. I've been a kid my whole career, just watching like skills and tricks and like players dribbling. And I was just see images in my head of all these players just running around like, and I just don't know, it stayed in my head. It was like an imagery thing.
I think that's something that Vic was really good at, allowing us to just be ourselves and not overcoaching or making us do things we didn't want to do in a game. You know, we didn't play inside ourselves. We were quite expansive. And that brings me on to now. You obviously got your own football academy. You're at Chelsea as an individual coach. Talk to me a little bit about, you work with these players every single day at Chelsea, and obviously what is it that you do at that football club with Emma Hayes?
Yeah, I mean, Emma Hayes, obviously, big part of my career. Can say I look up to her a lot, but the way she, you know, Vic Akers helped me play. I'm a big self-discovery player. There's a lot of players, and Emma Hayes obviously is big at letting self-discovery players be themselves. You look at Lauren James, massive
when you say elaborate. Self-discovery, like, elaborate a little bit, because
self-discovery, like, go and go and express yourself, go and find out what works for you, what doesn't on the pitch, as long as you stay within the game plan. But no one's going to micromanage you. And, you know, Emma Hayes is big on maverick players that like to do what they want. That was me. So she's brought me in. Can I help players? Can I give them an extra, I don't know, 5-10% to the game? Little finer liner details of working on first touches or finishes or using different parts of your feet or how you move your body. I'm pretty obsessed with football. When I watch it, I don't look at it so much from a tactical thing. I look at how people move. I look at how they receive a ball, how their body turns. You know, are you bending your knees enough? Are you pushing your feet off the floor to generate power on your touches and beating players? And I think maybe Emma thought I could bring an element of that and help players. So definitely for wingers. We have some wingers like Yo-Yo Kanyard, who's a massive explosive player, very similar to me, loves a 1v1. Can I help her move better on the ball? Can I bring encouragement to players that don't feel comfortable in front of goal? Give them those extras that can... There's nothing more. Football's such a psychological game. You need to be in a great place. Can I help players be in a great place by doing something they want to work on or just doing something that they feel they're good at, they want to do more of, so they can go into a game at the weekend feeling $100 million.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a market that's been missing, because I also think in training, you know, you can't focus on every individual. So I think there's definitely a market there for you, and I'm delighted that you're at the club doing that type of stuff, because I think sometimes at clubs, we don't have that, do we? The manager's managing and coaching. I've that Emma's brought you on board for that. Do you want to bring it back to you a little bit? Now, look, your England career. I had Gillie Flaherty on the show the other week. 16 caps for England. I don't think that's enough. I mean, I had 50. I still don't think that's enough. Not because I think I'm Ronaldo, but just stating the facts. Why do you think you never really got kind of the rub of the green with England?
Because I'm maverick. Because I was... It was tough. I feel like I never really grasped the style of play at that time. I think it would be very different now if I was in my prime now. I don't know. I just feel like the type of player I am, people needed to understand me. I didn't want to have a coach on the sideline with a PlayStation controller telling me what to do, pressing R2. I know all the FIFA buttons, by the way. So, you know, press triangles through ball at that point. And I just feel like I think I lacked some work ethic, if I'm being honest with you, if I want to be true and honest. But I feel like I never felt confident enough to express myself. I do feel like there were times where I maybe could have been utilised more playing for England, but I understand the game's an opinionated game and there is no right and wrong. England have been brilliant, and I'm proud of my career, and I've found the love in club football. And playing for a coach that believed in me, playing for a coach that believed in me. And I just, I maybe feel like I couldn't express myself enough. But if I was to do it again now, I wouldn't care.
Yeah.
And I would go and express myself more with no fear of failure.
But that's down to coaches. I always say, like, I'd love to play for Serena Wiegmann. I played for Emma Hayes as well. When you play for those types of coaches, they get the best out of you because they just kind of let you be you. We then discussed some of the key results in the WSL from the weekend, including Manchester City's win over Bristol City to officially relegate them back to the Championship, where Crystal Palace got promoted out of this weekend too. First, here's TalkSport's Uma Gurav with a full roundup.
With just the WSL trophy still available to them, Chelsea's task of retaining their title is looking more difficult than ever. Man City's 4-0 win over Bristol City puts them 6 points clear at the top of the table, and it also sends the Robins back down to the Championship. But Bristol have much to be proud of, and they have already pledged their ongoing support to manager Lauren Smith. Elsewhere, a cagey weekend in the WSL all around. No less than 3 matches finished in 1-1 draws this weekend. Arsenal were denied a win against Everton after 16-year-old Izzy Hobson scored a 95th-minute equaliser. She takes the record for the youngest player to score in the WSL, and she takes it from none other than lioness Lauren Hemp. It bodes well for the youngster's future. It means the Gunners' chances of winning the WSL are now completely finished. It really is a two-horse race now. Nothing to separate Tottenham and Brighton either after Beth England equalised late in the game. And West Ham denied Aston Villa the win with yet another stoppage time equaliser. Elsewhere, Man United finally broke through Leicester's defences to pick up a 1-0 win thanks to substitute Ella Toon. Meanwhile, Chelsea will be aching from their Champions League exits, but they're in action against a strong Liverpool side midweek, and a win is vital to keep them in touch with Man City. In Emma Hayes' final season, the Blues are now facing the daunting reality that it will either be the WSL trophy or it will be no silverware at all.
So, Gem, first game we're going to talk about, Manchester City versus Bristol City. Bristol City inevitably have been relegated. I think it was inevitable. I think they've done a good job. But ultimately, we speak on this show a lot about when teams come up, it's always going to be difficult budgets-wise. What have you made of Bristol City this year and what did you make of the game?
I think it's always a tough ask. Obviously, you've said that already. Any team that gets promoted into the WSL, I think people, just from an outside looking in, you need to look at like any other league. If you're coming down from Championship, you've been promoted, no problem. But the WSL is a force to be reckoned with. The level and the level of the women's game is going up. WSL is tough, and you're seeing it in the results every week. There's more upsets. It's not a predictable route anymore. And it was always going to be tough. I think they did a great job to get there, but I can't explain it.
I know what you mean, though, because it's like when you come, it's like reserve football and first team football. When I played in the reserves,
it's a big
the
golf.
Tempo, the speed, the pace. And when teams do come up, ultimately certain players, they are championship players, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's calibre.
Yeah, and it's the reality. And that's what Crystal Palace will have in mind now they've come up. I want to take it back to Manchester City this year. You know, I've been quite critical of Gareth Taylor in recent years because I don't think they've achieved anywhere near it. But what have you made of them this year? And, you know, they're pushing Chelsea, aren't they, all the way?
Yeah, and do you know what? You want to see that. You want to see the league exciting. You want to see it go down to the wire. And I'm a big fan of Man City. I like the way they play. I like their structure. As a wide player, as a winger, I'd love to play in that team. Touchline wingers, 1v1s, Lauren Hemp's causing, you know, lots of trouble. I like to see Jess Park. She's definitely evolving her career at Man City, and they've been fun. I think they've been great this year. I like the way they're putting pressure, but Bunny Shaw, big miss.
I know, I was going to ask about Bunny Shaw because I say it all the time on this show, I don't think she gets the recognition and the love that she deserves. She's one of the best players in the world, should be up for every single award when it's the FIFA's best, those types of things. Do you think they'll struggle without her?
Well, I think, what was their first goal scored against Bristol City? It was 62nd minute.
So, yeah, exactly. I mean, so the scoreline did flatter City a little bit, but this is what you do. When you're at the top of the table, you find a way, don't you?
You do. But I think having her on your side, she's a player that you'd prep to play against. You know that she's the... I mean, we don't know their game plans, but if I had her in my side, I would build around her. She's a great target player. You are a target player yourself. You build around players like that to bring players into the game. And just her presence alone, I'd imagine the team are feeling that.
And our former club, Arsenal, you know, held by Everton. What have you made of Arsenal this year and Jonas Edervall and those types of things? Because you look at the club, and this has been building from 1987 when the club was founded by Vic Akers, and David Dean was a big part of that. That's why they're selling out the Emirates, because they have that fan base. But the performances, and they've not been challenging at all this year. Bringing in Alessia Russo, at times she's been on the bench. I couldn't understand it. I understand playing Blackstenius. But I do think, why would you bring in a player like Alessia Russo if you're not going to start her all the time?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Russo. Only he will know that. I'm a fan of Arsenal the way they're playing as well,
but what's missing though, Gem? You know, like,
there is something missing. There is something missing. I don't know if it's an in-house. I don't know what's going on inside. There's a lot of factors involved. But at the end of the day, you have to look at the Chelseas and the Man Cities. Why are they consistent every season? They're consistent every season for a reason. Organisation, players they're bringing in, are they suiting the values of the club? Are they these players slotting in and going by the tactics of what the coach is like? Do their personalities fit the environment? And they may have to go back and look at recruitment. They may have to look. But one thing I do like about Arsenal is that they are giving youth a chance. And I think they have big future in their club if they utilise these youth players right. But at the end of the day, it's a club that have to pick up trophies, and they need to probably reassess this season, which I'm sure they already are. to see, and I think they need some more experience, some bigger players. But Alessia Russo, you've got to utilise her. She's a fantastic player and a player of the future. She's going to lead England.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think with those types of players, you've just got to let them play through certain moments. Another one of your former sides, you know, I actually played in the game at Leighton Orient yesterday, so my body's in bits and I was struggling walking up the stairs with you at the same stadium. But I saw Becky Spencer, a friend of the show, yesterday after her game as well. Spurs-Brighton 1-1. What have you made of those two teams this year? Obviously, Brighton, managerial change. Spurs in an FA Cup final. Amazing, really.
Yeah, the difference in Spurs compared to when I was there is insane. I was speaking to one of their coaches the other week, and it's something where I look at them now and I'm like, oh, I wish I could play for them now. They've capped some great performances this season, and I think it's a big shift for women's football. They've made FA Cup final. And after seeing Beth England the other day as well, she's obviously gone into that club wanting to really make a difference. Trying to be a big leader, big voice, try and inspire people in there. And they're making the right moves. They're bringing in some great players. And I'd imagine next season that they're going to evolve again. And they're an evolving club that have made great gains with their support from within the club and within the infrastructure. And I actually genuinely hope they go and win the FA Cup final.
Yeah, what do you think? Because obviously you've been there and you've seen it, kind of the growth of the club. And we had Laura Kaminsky on the show last week as well. Obviously used to be an assistant there. And Woody's there as well, which I love. Our old teammate, Emily Westwood. What do you think has been the biggest difference at Tottenham then from you, what you've seen? Because you said, you know, they've evolved. Is it the coach? Is it the players? Obviously, Ash Neville, Jess Naz has been there from when they were like two leagues below.
Yeah, which I think is amazing that they've managed to evolve within the WSL's players and survive in there, because it's so easy for a club to evolve their squad to have better players when you get promoted. We all know if a team gets promoted, not everyone that's got made the work to get there is going to stay and get a contract. And you have to look at Ashley Neville. When I went to Spurs, they'd just been promoted. And she was, I tell you what, she's a great person. Her work ethic's high. She's probably one of the hardest working players I've played with in my career. But she had a lot to work on. Very rash in tackles, but she has really evolved into the game. The game's become very athletic. The fitness levels have gone up in the game, and she's managed to survive in that environment and play every game. Jess Naz was always a future player there. She has incredible pace. Technically, actually, I don't think people realise how technically smooth she is. And I know she's very highly thought of in the club. And I like the way that they're putting values into their homegrown players.
Yeah, I always felt like Ashley Neville should have been given more of a chance at England, but that's a whole other story. Just want to bring it back to Crystal Palace getting promoted. I know you know Laura Kaminsky really well. First season at Palace, you know, we had Marianne Spacey on the show, I had Karen Hills on the show. And I think even I was blindsided by this one because I love Palace. You know, I grew up on the street that their training ground is on in Beckenham. So, well, I'm from Lewisham, but the school was in Beckenham. And before people come after me. But what have you made at Crystal Palace? What a job she's done there.
She's been brilliant. And also, you have to credit Adam as well, the assistant. He's got a wealth of experience, been working with Reading Football Club. Laura Kaminsky, I'll take it back to her. I worked with her at Spurs. She really helped me individually as a player. Kept me really sane at times where I found it really frustrating. I'll be really open. I found frustration at times, but I've grown up with the best clubs, and she really made me focus on my game and my individual part of my game. And I thought her speciality was her ability to be able to connect with players. And I think that as a manager, you either have that or you don't. And I actually felt Tottenham, even though she wasn't a manager, I actually wanted to play for Laura. So I'd imagine at Palace, I don't know the ins and outs, but players want to play for her. I know a few players in there. I've got a big connection with Lexi Potter, who's a youth player at Chelsea, who I've known since she was 7 or 8
years
old.
You used to coach her, didn't you?
Yep, and I'm incredibly proud of her. I'll say it on Talk Sport. And they've really helped evolve her as a player. And she's really, really, really kicked on this year. And I think she's a big future.
Yeah, we spoke to Laura Kaminsky last week, and when she co-hosted the show with me, and we asked her at what point of the season did she actually believe that the club could get promoted?
I'm going to be honest and say never. I think everyone was saying it more than I was. I was always really concentrating on, I'll tell you one thing, I've not once looked at the table all year, because the table was irrelevant until you get to the sharp end of things. So there was no point in me looking at the table. It would just get me into a twist of, oh, if they do that and if we do this. And I focused on us all year, on our camp, our players, rather than our position, which I think has taken a lot of pressure off the group. And I've said to the group over and over again, the only pressure week after week is to perform, not points. There's a difference. And you know, handling that as a first time as a manager, it's always a bit risky. I sought some advice, some great mentors in my life, in and around football, and discussed it at length of my options of what to do. But I decided to go with performances are more important than points, because the group love to play good football. And anyone who's watched Crystal Palace this year will probably say that footballing wise, they've been outstanding. So I really, really think that's come through in our identity, and eventually points mean prizes.
Jen, my last question to you about Crystal Palace getting promoted. What do you think they can do differently to what Bristol City have done? Because I think, I said to Laura last week, in the back of her mind, she must be thinking, I don't want that to happen to us.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge is, obviously you do all the work to be have get promoted, but you know what's coming. And you know it's not going to be an easy task going into WSL. But just from experience from playing against Palace this year, I'm so glad it's them that have been promoted, because for me, they played the best football. I thought they were the best off the ball as well. I thought they were hard to break down. And just their football, how they want to play. I do think they can do some work. I think she's going to have to recruit, obviously, some more experience. We
and
all
some
know
players
that has
will go
to
back
happen.
Off loan as well, like Araya Dennis. I know they signed her at Tottenham and she's on loan there. Lexi Potter as well. Some of the players are not the level of WSL. That's just a reality. So they'll have to recruit. That's going to be difficult, isn't it?
But I think that's where the coaching staff, whereas Laura's got connections with players, she's worked with players within the WSL before, so has Adam, the assistant. So there will be a big pull where people will want to go and play. Players want to go and play for coaches that know them. So it's how they utilise trying to find these players. But I do like they have a lot of well-rounded players at Palace, and I do think there's a good base. They just need to get it right with their recruitment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
On Saturday, Chelsea crashed out of the Women's Champions League. Gemma and I spoke about the disappointment for Chelsea and Emma Hayes. Now, Gem, very fitting I've got you on today. You work at the club. Talk to me about this game. I want to go back to the first leg. First time Barcelona have lost at home in 5 years. What was the feeling like leading into that second leg?
Into second leg, I think, to be honest with you, the run-up in the week was very focused. Massive emphasis not getting carried away. I think there's a massive respect for Barcelona. Emma was very, very big on that, but the girls know that anyway. The staff know that. We all know they're arguably the best team in the world right now. They play the best football. They've got Bon Matty, who I'm a big fan of. I mean, it's endless. Their player pool is incredible. And we knew they were going to come out. We knew they were going to come out and throw in a high press, and because they got to. They also, they wouldn't have liked being beat at home.
Well, you can see after the game with the comments, because they're not used to it, are they? But I think over there, it was like a tactical masterclass. Fantastic performance from Chelsea. But I've always said, in order to beat Barcelona, I genuinely feel in a two-legged semi, you have to beat them 3 or 4-0, whether it's home or away. You just do. Because they just seem to know. They're like, I don't want to compare them to men, but they remind me of Man City men. They just always find a way. Because over the two legs, I don't even think they had their best performances. Do you think Chelsea overall were kind of in it? You know, like, do you think genuinely Chelsea were in it?
Do you know what? I would be really real with you, but yeah, I do. And I actually thought their performance at Stamford Bridge was fantastic. I thought playing against a team who are massively dominant in possession, I didn't see that. But also I saw a flip in momentums massively within the game. I thought Barcelona were very much on top first 20. But you see a Chelsea team, very organised. You've got players that are battling here with a desire to win. I think you could see there was no fear. And I think with football, you know, in yourself, you go and play against teams that everyone thinks are going to win. It's a massive, massive psychological test.
We play for a team like that, and it can work for you or against you.
Exactly. And I think with experience, you look at when we were at Arsenal, we couldn't beat Lyon. You know, I was at Chelsea, we couldn't beat Wolfsburg. But it's only a matter of time before the tides change. And that's why I'm gutted for Chelsea, because I feel like going into that first leg, there's obviously going to be some type of, not fear, but nervousness going in and playing the best team in the world. We've both had that feeling. But the performance away from home was a performance that should be very, very confident. So going into Stamford Bridge, you know, you've got belief in the group. But not only belief, but you know that you know you can win it. And there is no better feeling than when you walk out in a tunnel with your team and you're full on 100% confident. That you know, there's no fear. Look, you don't even bother looking at the team next to you. No chance. And that's why I'm gutted about the game. But, you know, Chelsea had opportunities to win it. And it's a shame. But I do think the tides have changed. And there's a psychological belief in there that for everyone, you know what, they can be beat. They're unbelievable, don't get me wrong. But you have to make statements. I still think they made an incredible statement.
Obviously, the red card decision changed the game. The penalty was ultimately what won Barcelona the game. So before we get into that, let's hear what Emma Hayes has to say about it.
When you get such a shocking official decision, there's nothing you can do about it, and it's hard enough against 11 of them, but for us, when you've got 11, but when you've got 10, it's virtually impossible. Even Barcelona players said to us they knew the referee was helpful for them. I didn't think it was a foul, let alone a yellow card. But as I said, when you lose a game, for us, we didn't feel we got the opportunity to lose it. That was taken away. And I think that I was surprised when I saw her selected. She's famous for easy cards. And I think that is probably the worst decision in UEFA Women's Champions League history.
Now, Gem, I feel like we could do a whole show on this, but I was down on the sideline doing the game with DAZN post-game, and I was gutted for Emma Hayes, because I think ultimately Barcelona are the best team in the world. They are such a joy to watch, but you cannot have decisions like that that go against you, down to 10 players. Khadisha Buchanan, first one I think was a yellow, being honest. Then the ref has to use, you know, common sense, never a booking. Give a foul, wasn't even a foul, but just give a foul. But to then go and give her a second yellow in that way, it was always going to be an uphill battle with 11 on the pitch. But talk to me about the officiating, because I think it was an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, it's, do you know what? It's just a massive shame. Obviously, she's notoriously known for giving cards. We knew that within the game. But you can try. At what point as a player do you not go in for a challenge that's so fair? There's no intent in anything in that challenge.
Patrice sold it really well, but it's the dark arts of the game. The referee still has to officiate.
I mean, there was a lot of people in our ear at that point. And are you going to hold the nerve? Are you going to stick to your decision? Or are you going to listen to outside information? And it's just, I mean, I'm pretty sure we hit the post not long before that. So you've just completely killed the game. And this is what I'm saying about Chelsea is, you know, if you have a game that's decided on a penalty and a red card, what does that say about the game? It wasn't defined by one team outplaying the other. And you've got to credit the group. The proof is in the footage on the foul, on the red card. Everyone knows it's not a foul. Everyone knows it's not a foul, let alone not a red card. And what more can you say about it? I don't blame Emma for saying what she said.
I agree with her 150%.
I think the majority of people do. And I'm incredibly disappointed for her and the group, because I think it completely, like we all know, it completely changed the game.
It did, because Chelsea was still in it at that point. Now, obviously, they have VAR. They don't have it in WSL yet. They have it in America, which I'm a big fan of. They had it at the weekend and they can't intervene on a second yellow. So therefore, that doesn't really come down to the VAR. But the penalty, I mean, I understand why it was given as well. You know, Bonmatí goes in between. As soon as you raise your arm, Ashley Lawrence is going in between. I think you can make the referee, they're going to make a decision. I know why Chelsea would feel hard done by. But what do you make of VAR within the women's game?
VAR is so controversial, isn't it? I'd like to see it there. Really, I think there's been a lot of times where it's tough. There's been lots of times where this VAR is quite... What am I going to say about VAR?
Well, there was one where, remember in the Champions League when Jesse Fleming, they gave a penalty, definitely wasn't a penalty. Mm-hmm. Now, football is a matter of opinions, right? There are always going to be some people that like a certain player, some people that don't. But the thing that bothers me about the officiating of late, I mean, why would Stephanie Frappart not referee that game? Someone that referees in the men's game, someone that is the most... probably the best female referee in the world right now. We don't also have to have a female referee. That has to be said as well. I'm a big believer in having the best person for that job. But I think in the end, that referee wasn't up to standard and just didn't have it. In a game like that, a semi-final of the Champions League, in a second leg, you have to have somebody that can hold their own.
Yeah, I think especially based on what the score was, Chelsea 1-0 up, I think you've got to have a referee that's... the top of the top ones, and I don't know why she was nominated to do that game. That's something that I think will be assessed. I think she's going to get a lot of heat. But if you want to do that job, you take the heat.
Yeah, I mean it's too little, too late now. I know it's not an easy job to do. I wouldn't want to be a referee because you have to get those types of decisions correct. That was such a bread and butter decision. Now I feel for Chelsea, and those are the fine lines and the fine margins between winning and losing. Emma Hayes now in her last season at Chelsea. You're at the club working with her day in, day out. The league is the only thing left now. It's hard to even fathom in her last season, Emma Hayes not winning. I want her to win something in the last season. What's the morale like around the club? How is she feeling? How are you all feeling about, the focus now is only on one trophy?
Yeah, I think the best thing about Chelsea Football Club is it's very much don't get ahead of yourselves, don't get low on yourselves. It's okay to feel the way you want to feel. But no matter what, you have a job to do. There's still a trophy to be won. There is no doubt that she will go for the league. She's a born bred winner. You know that. We both know her very well. But also the players she's recruited and the staff that are in, no one's happy unless they're winning something. So it will be job on winning the league now. That's it. And there won't be any dwelling for long. The players are going to be allowed to have that moment, but the job continues. No matter what in that environment, there's no settling. You are moving on to the next thing. Do you know what? Even if we beat Barca, now we've got to go. We've got to move on. The next day you move on. And that's why it's one of the best clubs in the world, because no matter what, people don't get comfortable. You ain't got time to... You can be low. Like Emma will be low. But you got to move on. There's still a trophy to be won. And she's done such an excellent job with Chelsea. How many times have Chelsea won the league now? That's the job.
She'll be a massive loss to that football club. And obviously we can speak. We have a whole show on Emma Hayes. I think also you have to have a little bit of luck sometimes in football. Obviously losing Sam Kerr and also, earlier in the season, Mayra Ramirez getting that injury on Friday. Obviously, Katerina Macario had to play. Didn't really offer that same, depth, I think, that Mayra Ramirez. I thought she was really good in that first leg. So if you had everybody available, we have to give praise to Barcelona, because I think we can't just sit here and say, oh, the referee was the reason. But those things do make a difference. And I think ultimately Barcelona in the final, it may, and Bilbao and Chelsea are not. But hopefully going forward, they can learn from these experiences, Gem. Finally, I was joined in the studio by TalkSport's newsreader, Max Scott, who has done an investigation into the lack of female-only boots on the market by sports manufacturers. Max and I went into a little bit more detail on why that is the case and what brands are actually doing to lead the way. Lovely to see you. We always see each other on a Thursday. You're reading the news, giving us all the breaking news. Now, you've been doing this research for 2 months, you just told me.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what you found, your findings, and is there anything that surprised you? Tell me a bit about it.
Well, I think despite the colossal growth of the women's game, despite the fact that there's 16.6 million women and girls playing organised football across the world, that doesn't account for people just playing socially in the park with their mates, playing at school. Despite the fact that the WSL attendance since the Lionesses won the Euros has increased by 200%, there is the global sportswear brands have been accused of failing women and girls by not designing nearly enough football boots specifically catered for the physiology of their feet. So what I was keen to do was to try to investigate and really look at the track record of these big companies to understand whether and to find out whether they're doing enough. And to be honest, I was shocked, but I think what I've also learned is that lots of women playing the game won't be shocked by this. But Adidas told me that they haven't made a women-specific boot since 2016. So that's 8 years. In that time, they've spent over £1 billion or billion euros on general research and development, but haven't managed to create one boot specifically tailored for women. Adidas have told me that they have a gender-neutral approach, that they don't tailor their boots for a specific gender. Now, this sounds inclusive. It sounds like equality, but the people that I've been speaking to have been saying, well, actually,
it sounds lazy to me, to be honest. Like, you know, I'm all for gender equality. You know, I talk about that stuff all the time, but to be honest, it sounds quite lazy, because why would you then have one in 2016? What was the reason for them discontinuing it? Did you ask them those types of questions?
Well, it's been very difficult, really, to contact these companies. You know, that's something that I've definitely learned in this investigation. But that's what Adidas have said, is that what they say is they have absolute parity when they design their boots and when they test their boots. So the same amount of women and men are involved. But the people I've been speaking to, who we'll hear from in a moment, they say that this doesn't go as far as they should and as to what women need. I tried to contact Nike on three separate occasions. I haven't heard back from them. But from my own sort of research, found that they brought out the Phantom Luna boot, and they made a big deal about this before the World Cup last year. And it was marketed heavily towards women, and they said that there's cutting-edge research, and I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure they've put a lot of research into this boot, but it is a unisex boot. It isn't exclusively for women, and so there's been criticism, again, that this is just, and I've come across this phrase, I don't know if you've heard it, Leanne, shrink it and pink it.
No, I haven't.
So this idea that there are worries that women in the game are being sold boots that are essentially just smaller versions of men's boots marketed towards them, put colour pink on it or put a different design on it, and that'll do. And that'll help, that'll bring in the revenue. Now, this is the criticism I've heard. And so really I've found that there's been a distinct lack or an alarming lack of boots on the market, despite not only the growth of the women's game, but despite the fact that ultimately this is a basic need for women playing the game, is to have equipment that works for them.
And the thing is as well, Max, my guy friends wear pink boots. You know, it's not specific to male or female and those types of things. But you know what? It doesn't surprise me, because we're only seeing now that, you know, the goalkeeper jerseys are on sale. Like Mary Earp's shirt wasn't on sale before. And in America, they've announced, you know, they're bringing out these jerseys. What do you think these companies have to consider when they're creating and designing, from a manufacturing perspective, female football boot?
Well, I've become somewhat of like an expert amateur podiatrist, because I've been speaking to leading experts in the field about, well, what is the difference between a man and a woman's foot? Now, women have narrower heels, a wider toe box, which, and lots of girls that I've spoken to have said they're often getting blisters on their little toe or on their heels because of the way that their foot is shaped. If it's put in a men's boot or a unisex boot, that often happens. Higher arches, women have wider hips, and so they pressure load very differently to men. So the kinetic energy that comes from the floor moves through their feet, through their knees, very differently. Now, of course, you'll know more than anyone, this issue of ACL injuries in the women's game is a real hot topic. Arguably, it's an epidemic. Women are 8 times more likely to get ACL injuries. Now, and so it's really, it's the topic of the moment. So ultimately, the way that pressure runs through women's feet is completely different. And so this is why the people that I've been speaking to have been saying, look, unisex is not enough. It's not enough to have that. There needs to be exclusive boots for women, only in women's sizes, designed specifically for them. And arguably, we're not seeing that happening.
And you've spoken to the CEO of IDA Sports, haven't you, about this?
Yeah, so it's IDA Sports, actually. And Laura Youngson is the co-founder and CEO of a female-first brand. And ultimately, she saw this in the industry. She saw a lack of this and said, right, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to design boots just for women and girls. And she told us what it's like to be a female-first organisation and what it's like to trying to be blazing a trail in the industry.
I think for the main brands, the challenge is that women are never going to be the first and foremost priority for them. And the athletes are voting with their feet and they've got that star power, but they're perhaps not being served in the way that they could be. And I think for us, it's why we've deliberately chosen to be a female first brand. We are literally dedicating our time and energy to making the best products for women. And we're always going to put them first.
Obviously, we speak a lot about the ACL injury. I've had it myself, meniscus and ACL. And this year, it just seems like everybody is doing their ACL. We've become desensitized to this type of injury. And I think if it was in the men's game, you know, it would have already been taken care of. I think the research is great, people are doing research, but I don't think it's going to catch up, Max, for another 5 to 10 years, unfortunately. What difference have you found that a football boot can make in this process? I mean, we're looking for small margins here. We're not saying it's based upon a male boot, a female wearing a male boot, why players are getting injured.
Exactly.
But it makes a difference, surely.
Yes. So what I've learned is that there's no way of categorically saying what causes an ACL injury for a man or for a woman. There are so many different factors. You'll know whether it's sort of the quality of the pitch, whether it's the surface, whether it's the types of boots you're wearing, whether it's a fitness-related, strength and conditioning-related thing. There is no way of providing a study of such a wide group of people to categorically say that it is an issue. But I spoke to Professor Kat Ockholm-Krieger. She's dedicated her life to researching football boots and injuries. She's from St. Mary's University. She works in sports medicine. And I asked her whether it's a contributing factor. And this is what she had to say to me.
We need to consider every single factor. And I believe that this is one of them. And when you talk to players, I hear, you know, the anecdotal story of, you know, I got injured because my football boot got stuck in the surface. But, you know, there isn't a data set to say football boots are causing this many ACL injuries, and there never will be.
I want to end on a positive note because something you said earlier on when we first spoke at the top of the show about, you know, you've reached out to other companies and they haven't come back to you. I think that's very telling. And I think you're able to make a difference just by reaching out to them because they know there's people like yourselves knocking on the door. Let's give praise to Puma because obviously they've been proactive. Why do you think, you know, they're leading away? What was it you found from them that has been the reason why they would want to be part of this and they're doing it before everyone else, really?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the global sports brands, it's definitely Puma seem to be bucking the trend here. You know, we've got to shout out IDA. They're really blazing a trail. And this phrase goes around a lot in the industry, doesn't it? But they're real disruptors and they're sort of causing a nuisance because they're starting to shine a spotlight and educate young girls on why this is important. You know, I've spoken to pros who have said, you know, when they were in their prime, they didn't even know that this was a massive issue. And so we've got to give props to IDA. But in terms of the global sports brand, Puma, you know, they've designed women's specific boots since 2021 and earlier than anybody else on sort of a regular scale. And they've actually invested in research into ACLs. So clearly this is something that's really important to them. I actually had an interview lined up with them, but because the person I was going to speak to is actually traveling the world talking about these very things, that our schedules clashed. But, you know, it's not all bleak, like you say. There is hope, but of course we've got to keep talking about it. It's got to be something that is really important and something that I feel passionate about is that it shouldn't just be women that are talking about this. It should be blokes. You know, I'm on TalkSport talking about whatever it is, whether it's my beloved Nottingham Forest, whether it's what's happening in the Premier League, whatever. I think it's really important that there is sort of parity between we should care about this because it's not just an issue of being able to buy a boot. I think it's an issue of just basic rights. I used to be a teacher. I was a deputy head and I saw the impact that the Lionesses had on literally thousands of girls in my school, right? And they're all wearing men's boots and they don't have a clue that actually there is something out there for them, right?
Yeah, and I think I want to thank you actually because I was thinking this before. You know, you've taken it upon yourself to do this off your own back because you feel passionate about it. And I think when you're authentic and you care about something, but you don't have to do that. So I just want to thank you for doing that. And for those of you that want to hear Max, and you should want to hear him, you can listen back on talksport.com and you can hear this full audio, everything you found, all the research you found, Max. And I just want to thank you for doing it, really.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for, you know, giving me the platform to talk about it. It's been great.
Thanks a lot. That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next Monday with a jam-packed show as the WSL title race really heats up.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Flimsy staying slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.